This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Well, I come to you as a learner too, so all of life is a lot like that. The title of this workshop is Chairing Nonprofit Boards. And I think it's true that many of us learn on the job here. You'd think that with the weightiness of board members in overseeing the work of nonprofit corporations and ministries, that we'd probably need to have quite the schooling, or a week of training or something in order to do that. But that is not very common. And so really we come at this kind of thing needing to learn like we do in a lot of life. As far as that's concerned, that's not that uncommon. What we have is that much of the work of the kingdom of God is dependent upon Christian ministries. And it's a gift to society. And for that matter, all of the philanthropy is a work of giving and a work of helping and improving communities and society. And so that is something that requires people to manage it and to represent the common good. Consequently, a lot of benefits are given by the government to nonprofits. For example, they don't have to pay income taxes on their earnings. For another, people that give to a 501c3, which is a special part of the nonprofit ministries, but most of them may seek that, can claim a charitable deduction on their income taxes. And so that's another concession that the government gives. And in addition, nonprofits don't fall under the normal labor laws, so that volunteer labor, which is the backbone of a lot of nonprofits, are also not coming under the jurisdiction of the U.S. Department of Labor, and so on and so forth. So there's a big benefit there. However, there then also is the need for supervisory boards. And so we discover that these boards are given the trust of taking care of this nonprofit organization, and hence the term trustee that comes out of that. And so we may be called board members, we may be called board of directors, we may be called trustees. There are various titles that are used in this sphere. And like I said, it's almost a marvel that we wouldn't need to take more training in order to serve more effectively and better. But maybe a few little workshops like this can help. And it never hurts to sharpen the axe, to think about the things that can help us do it better. And I'm always learning on the job like you are. So that's why my first slide, and by the way, it's going to be hard for you to believe, but on my screen, it's blue with white print. On this orange wall, it's whatever it is with yellow print. And I picked some other color schemes for some of the other slides. I've yet to see how that's all going to look. But Abraham Lincoln is right. You don't really lose time to sharpen your axe, and I want to make these 40 minutes or plus worth your while. The Bible says something similar. The wise man said that it's a dull axe that requires great strength. Be wise and sharpen the blades. So here we go as we try to figure some things out. The introductory paragraph that I put in the program here is that a chairman plays a critical role in managing the oversight of a nonprofit ministry. A well-functioning board of directors requires a board chairman who is an advocate, a delegator, a diplomat, and more. I'll comment a little further on this, but a board chair is a key person. And you'll notice in the handouts that are behind the slides, the notes pages here, you'll notice that the very first handout does challenge us all who are called to be chairman to be serious about this, because we carry a very crucial role in the health and the function of the board of directors and the nonprofits that the directors oversee. So the chairman's role, I'm going to have 9 slides out of 28 that introduce 9 roles. There could be more, but first, the chairman's role is to know the board and staff roles and delegate accordingly. It's to help directors know their role. And so I submit to you, we should be clear and know some of these things. Well, chiefly, we will notice that the board is responsible for governance, and that differs from the management role of the staff. And I'll give some illustration and examples here. So in governance, the board develops policy and the management implements policy. So the board should live in the future, should have the eye to the future. The board thinks about what, and the staff puts it into action. The board discerns and the staff acts. And we'll notice some more, think and do, and the contrast of being the nerve center or the head versus the hands. And finally, while the board chair has the main responsibility of keeping the board focused on substantive issues, all members can share the responsibility. So it's a team effort. As we look at this kind of thing, we need to be careful to be very careful. Let me come back to emphasize that as a chair, let's be careful that we differentiate in roles, that we are involved in governance as directors, and that management or administrators and staff are carrying it out. Now, I will pause to make an admission that sometimes when boards are relatively unadjacent, as I am and my board members at Faith Builders, that we do need to be very thoughtful and careful about how that the administration and staff that's there, you know, 360 days a year, more or less, that as they develop these things, these policies and suggestions and a lot of suggestions for agenda, that we come in and in a couple or 3 days, we hear, we deliberate, they really do appreciate us, they want us to, but a lot of times in some ways it seems like a board can be a rubber stamp group. And so it is, I think, imperative for us to see and to be thoughtful about this kind of thing, that if we're going to be governing, we need to be careful lest some of this gets sort of by default put onto the shoulders by either default or whatever. So let's be thoughtful about this. And let's also recognize, I see that there may be some in here that are administrators, and there are some of us that are on boards, and I wouldn't know who all of you are either. Let's be thoughtful about the fact that in some ways the role of a board is a check and a balance. Like in government, the legislative body and the judicial branch and the executive branch form checks and balances, and it's a beauty. When it's working well, it's a beauty. It's not always working well in actual practice in our time, but it's still a good system, and in as far as it's working, and so we want to have that kind of thing in boards too, that we recognize that we are something of a check and a balance for the administration. And they feel secure when they have that, when they sense that. Having said that, some more of the slides probably ought to illustrate this. There is also a truth out of balance is always a problem too. Having said that, it's very crucial for the board, especially the board chair, but especially it's crucial to the board that the chief administrator, the executive director, or the CEO, whatever the term is, that there is a very close relationship there. If that can be maintained, that's the most crucial relationship from board to staff. If that can be nurtured so that there's a working together, then the organization can flourish in a much greater way than the. Any questions or comments about this slide? I think it's important.
There's just one thing that we're learning is that if you don't, you'll either have a leader or a manager as your CEO. And if you have a manager as your CEO, the board almost can't govern. They will be too much involved in running it, where if you have a leader, the board can truly govern.
Okay.
That came from Bill Mullen himself when he shared with us at Choice Books, and it really helped us clarify what kind of board do we really want to be. It takes a tremendous amount of energy for a board to be a managing board.
And oh my.
They're out of place.
That's right.
But if you have that kind of CEO, you have to hold his hand.
Interesting concept. I need time to really understand all the truth of that, but I think we're together. Anything else? Yes.
There's an angel, not sure whether it's implied in this or not, in this last one or not. There's a danger also that a board can do micromanaging, you may be getting to this at some point, and try to do the kind of managerial things that are really the responsibility of the management rather than the other.
Exactly. And it's right here. You know, we've got to be careful. We've got to be careful. You know, some of those details can illustrate what we need to look at to help make the decision, but let's be careful on that. Anything else? We need to go. So now I come back, though, to say something here about my introduction. I said the chairman plays a critical role in managing, kind of let's understand it carefully, the oversight of the nonprofit ministry. We're not to be administrators, but still we have a management of the affairs of the board. So be careful to understand what I'm saying there. Edgar Stace, did you say Stace?
Stace.
Wrote a book, Doing Good Even Better, and I've got it in a little different format. I think that the bookstore has it. I requested that they would have it in case you'd like to have it. Edgar Stace has been involved in chairing the Habitat for Humanity and worked with a number of Mennonite organizations and boards. And he wrote a book, this is a sequel, I think, to an earlier one, Doing Good Even Better. And he says that many organizations, sad to say, live too much in the present. I believe that the board's domain is in the future. Again, governance and vision. The chairman's role, secondly, is to build participation. So he sets the stage, he welcomes everybody, some of you would do this better than I even, to create a relaxed setting in meetings and other exchanges, and to share information with committee chairpersons and administrative team members. So especially if it comes from one place to the other, to the chair, then he needs to be alert and helping to close the communication circle that it needs. And he needs to involve staff and support them in appropriate ways. Well, it's just kind of the advocate, bridge-building kind of role that a chairman can have, although remember, he does really rely on first of all, this means the administrative director or something, but anyhow, there's building participation. It's a collegial team thought that's in this slide. Any comments? Thirdly, the chairman's role is what we may think of first. He presides at meetings. He's the MC. He serves as the host. Some overlap with what I just said. He keeps the program focused, and is if there's a big agenda, as is usual, he's got to watch it, or he doesn't get to the rest of the agenda. And if there's a divergence of main point, and he needs to separate the two as he sees that kind of happening and helping the keep this thing moving towards proper resolution. So chairs are expected to lead and not dominate. Now you see me today kind of trying to enlist your input and so on as I go, but it's also true that I can almost dominate because I'm doing most of the talking. But at meetings, we need to recognize we're leaders of a team. And we're not the board. It is a unique concept. It is a special concept, a powerful concept, that the board can give direction when it's in session, and through the interchange of ideas, come to something that may not have been what any one of them would have proposed all by himself, but in the end, it's his, just as much as if he had thought of it, right? And now we're all going to march out of that room with agreement that that's what the board has said. Wonderful, wonderful process. Any comments about the chair's role in presiding at the board's meetings? I'm going on. If I can get the button right. So I'm going to review these three points here, just coming back to recast if I can get it to go. We need to know the board and staff roles. And again, the board's role is?
Governance.
And the staff role?
Implementation.
It's implementation or management or administration, right? Implementation is a good word. Build participation. So the chairman works in committee and out to include others, and he presides at meetings. And a verse that I'd like to just remind you, let all things be done decently in order. I'm plucking it right out of a passage on spiritual gifts, and yet somehow I want to apply it here in the use of our gifts of leadership and deliberation. Fourthly, the chairman's role is to acquire and communicate information. This is this brings up something where I have to kind of walk the line carefully, and as you and I practice it, we have to be careful in this area. Because his non-meeting role requires good communication. So there are things that come up between meetings, right? And so there may be times that you just have to call an email conference or a teleconference with the board. And you all know that board meetings are the most fun event of the year, right? You're laughing. And then the email conferences are even more fun than that, right? Oh, wow. Sometimes it's almost difficult to get this thing finished because everybody's out there doing everything else, and maybe they're thinking and praying about it and whatever. I sometimes think, anyhow, email meetings are a poor second best. But sometimes they come in, and the chair has this responsibility to keep this thing going. And in person, by email and telephone, he keeps others informed. The chair represents the board when it is not in session. Oh, boy. He serves as the CEO's supervisor. And yes, this is the most important relationship that you've got with regard to the organization, is your relationship with the CEO. That's really there. And he's the board's spokesperson, but, oh, here's where I think we need to be very careful. He takes great care not to usurp the role of the board and to keep it informed. So let's say now the board chair is being asked, what did you say last year and how does that apply to today? That's where the board chair has to refer back and bring that forward. But if somewhere in this process he's not careful and he doesn't communicate back to the board about this application or whatever, or if he doesn't realize that really we are charting new territory, then he's usurping the role of the board. And the parentheses maybe as important as anything up here. Board members have authority only when they're involved in an official meeting. So if somebody comes running up to you as a board of director, as a director of an organization, and he says, what do you think about A, B, or C? And you're tempted to just say, well, as a board member, well, I'll illustrate in flesh and blood in my community. There's a man that I know got to know fairly well that was appointed by his church to serve on the, how many minutes do I have? I better be thinking here, right? 20. About 20. I better keep going. He was appointed to the board of Mennonite Friendship Manor, and he took it to walking the halls and hearing the staff out and making spot decisions right there. You fix this and you do that, and he, whatever. One-sided reports in the first place, second place, is out of his responsibility. That was bad news. Tough for the organization. I think it affected some people, some employments. What am I doing wrong here?
Pushing the wrong button.
Probably am.
There you go.
You got it.
So he needs to understand the mission and communicate it to supporters and key constituents. I enjoyed what Bill had to say this morning. So much of what he said this morning was just better than I can say it. But a mission, understand the mission. If we don't have a mission, if we don't have a vision that's clearly articulated, then we're going to tend to just be shooting at the stars. And maybe that's, or something else, but it won't be focused. So let's understand the mission, and I included in the handouts in the back that the mission and vision statement that we at Faith Builders, the board and the administrative team got together in a weekend retreat, and we hammered and hammered and hammered. It took a day and a half to get what you've got there on page 2 of the handouts there. So a board chair needs to understand the mission. He needs to openly advocate the cause. He needs to speak in public. It's good if a board chair can be speaking in public on behalf of the organization. This may especially apply well when you're in a local situation, and provide leadership in activities and events, be visible in the community. He is an advocate. And then vision states the purpose for which an organization exists and for what it wants to become. That's so close to what Bill said this morning. Mission is what an organization commits itself to do, a little variation off of what I heard him saying. But again, this is Edgar Stace, so I recommend that if you want to have some further resource, that you look for this book. You can order it online, I'm sure. Check in the bookstore here. I think it's available for you there. Let's see here. This thing's stuck again. Am I turning it the wrong direction? The chairman's role, sickly raise funds. Now, I'm sure that all of you, when you were asked to serve on the board of directors, there was a certain amount of uncertainty and challenge in it, also a certain amount of being pleased to be asked. Well, if you have any vision for where you're serving, then you'd like to help the Lord's work, right? And so, but then I don't think a lot of times people are thinking about the fact that that could easily mean that I'm supposed to raise funds. That's where I'm headed with this comment. So a chairman, it's good where possible for the chairman to be a financial giver, even a lead financial giver to the organization. And he asks and challenges others, including fellow directors, for their support financially, and to even give thought and take some webinars and some training in how to raise funds and providing support for the organization. And every single director of a nonprofit should make a donation, according to Gail Gifford. And I am now referring to this book here, How Are We Doing? A One-Hour Guide to Evaluating Your Performance as a Nonprofit Board. Another recommended resource for you, and in the back, the 28th slide, I've listed together with several others. And how much should a director give till it feels good? All board members, oh, back again, sorry. Any comment? I'm not sure how well I'm doing here. Any comment on the fundraising? Let's move on. So, in review, the middle three, acquire and communicate information, very crucial and very key, and then understand the mission and communicate it to his supporters, finally raise funds, and remember what Hebrews says, do not forget to do good and to share. That's the giving concept. For with such sacrifices, God is well pleased. Chairing nonprofit boards, does anybody have a comment here as you think about these three? The chairman's role. Now I'm going to shift to another arena that I hadn't even thought about when I joined the board of FB, but I'm very involved in recruiting directors. Recruiting directors who are competent and give some diversity, that help represent the constituency, ones that are able to learn and can contribute. So he gives thought, together with the rest of the committee, on who is qualified, and then he gives orientation to the new directors before the first meeting, if possible, or certainly by the second, as we do it. Personal qualifications. The prospective directors need to be compatible with the organization's goals and values. This person needs to be at peace with himself, able to participate constructively while retaining independence of thought. So enter in, being willing to stick his neck out a little bit in contribution, but also willing to hear the others. And professional competencies that assist the board in doing its entire task. Sometimes it's good to have somebody with a specialized training or degree on the board. And so we, varying with the nonprofit, perhaps especially, reach out and seek those kinds of things. A lot of times in Christian ministries, we pay him a little more attention to the kinds of people that he represents than some of this, but use it for whatever it's worth. Representative of the constituency, I keep coming back to this. And organizational effectiveness begins with people. Our success comes from the abilities and faithfulness of the people running our nonprofit entities. Folks, this is people work. That's why we're emphasizing that we need people and qualified people. And we're recruiting directors who can add something to the mix and who are willing to put their shoulders to the wheel. A lot of times these are people that are already busy in other things, but we need these kinds of people to join up with us. A new board member's role. You know, this person needs to come with a certain amount of humility and respect for all that's gone before, but he shouldn't be intimidated by us or by the fact that he's new. His vote shall count equally with the vote of the most experienced director. Why? Because it's a team. It's not that we're shutting him off for the first year. Now, I want to think a little bit about some cautions in recruiting directors. Is the candidate's lifestyle in harmony with the organization? We need to be careful here. Be aware of someone who brings his own agenda. This can make it tough, especially if he's not going to be willing to be a team player. And beware of Lone Ranger directors, because board work is a team game. And you and I don't speak for the board by ourselves, and we need to come to the team to put our part into the pot. And you know, it's like pouring in the liquids into a bowl. If I pour in my quart and Merle pours in his quart, and when it's done, you can't even tell what's my part, right? Or Merle's part. Now it's the team thing. It's all poured in together. That's the beauty of team or teamwork in the work as a director. So remembering again that organizational greatness begins with people. And how did that one get out of there so quickly? I think it's going backwards. It's imperative to get the right people on the team. That's why I'm very concerned that about recruitment. We want to do the best we can for the mission of the organization. Now, eighthly, we need to evaluate performance. It's something that's good for us to do for ourselves, so that when Faith Builders Board, at every board meeting, I hand out at the beginning of the meeting a questionnaire, and it varies from meeting to meeting, for us to do some self-evaluation. We probably could do even better by doing more than what I'm asking now, but what I want to get is their feeling for where are we stronger and where are we weaker. And so they turn it back in, and then we tabulate and report back. So the chair should lead the board in self-assessment and assess the performance of the chief executive. These are probably some of the things that are the toughest to get to. Maybe if it's a new chairman, have mercy on him, and you know he'll get there. I've got some ideas in the handouts. You can surely find some somewhere else, maybe from a past chairman too. But in the handouts, I've got like from Anabaptist Financial, there are two evaluation forms, and at the very back, there's one that I took from the Minnesota Department of Nonprofits, maybe, or something similar to that. At your leisure, I'm giving you some resources. There was another one that I found online. You can find some too, I suppose. That one was looked good to me, but I also saw that I needed to jump some hoops before I could copy that one, and so I tried to acknowledge where these pages come from, but that when I made the call, I got a voicemail, and I was too close to my deadline, so I didn't jump through the hoop on that one. But there, you could probably find it, and maybe I could find it again too. Recognize good performance. In all of this, recognize the performance and support it. Share the credit, share the risk. This is the chairman's role. Finally, find your successor. So we're recruiting, we're also evaluating, and now we're finding successor. This, don't do this after 1 year or two necessarily. Do this as the Lord directs. But certainly if boards are healthy and if there are rotating terms and so on, it could well be that after, say, 10 years or whatever the bylaws say, that you're going to have to be looking for somebody else. Of course, the board willing, it can change before that. But identify and develop board members for future leadership. Obviously, the final call and choice is the board's. But when I was elected, the former chair gave me the courtesy call to ask me, would I be willing, and secured my willingness before the board began to wrestle with it, and so on. And so it was true that the board did ask me to take it on, but I think rather than to just leave these things all to haphazard planning, it's good for us to be a little thoughtful for the good of the organization. Now, we can get out of our place and we can handpick and whatever. And you know, if there are several good possibilities, let's mention the good possibilities. I don't want to try to plant a seed that's going to cause you some grief. But in the for the good of transition of the organization, I believe that there is a role here for the chairman to pave the way for succession. Chairing nonprofit boards. Review these 3 points: to be recruiting, to be evaluating, and to find a successor. And again, a verse or a quote. Whoa, yes, a verse from Edgar Stace. Apart from people, an organization is only a shell. It knows nothing. It can do nothing. What an organization is capable of doing resides in the abilities of the people who run it. That's why it's so important that we give some thought to that we find people with influence and leadership and vision that can fit well with the mission of this organization that we are laboring for. Now, I want to mention quickly some dangers. dangers of the chairman. Maybe we get so involved in certain startup parts of it that we chairman can become so much like the CEO and it's a problem. And I'm going to move. You've got it in front of you. Dominance. The chairman, just, he's all things. Strong personality. Some of these very strengths that make him a good candidate can lead to dominance. We've got to be careful about that. And then the founder syndrome. Many nonprofits begin and succeed based on the commitment and talent of one person, and so on. He continues to dominate for too long, and it's, you know, there are ways to work with this, but that may need to happen. So, back again to something that I said in the very introduction. Directors hold a nonprofit in trust. We hold it in trust for God, for the community of constituents, for the government. And we're responsible for other people's money and other people's personnel or other people's people, maybe in some cases young people. But we have a responsibility. So if you're on an advisory committee somewhere, you may say, I don't give a care. What about the financials? And I'll let you off on that, but if you join my board, I don't want to hear it. You don't want to see the financials. Because look, that's what we're in trust for, partly. I mean, it's the people first, but it's also this other. That's our trust. And we have a role as directors to make sure that we're not letting people down. Any comment on that? So, as board members, we recognize that we get the reports, and there might be mistakes somewhere, but it's never wrong for us to ask, what does this mean, and how can you support that? And so it's some part of our duty it's our duty first to appoint people that we can trust and continue to develop the relationship of trust, and then, you know, it goes down the chain to the head of financial operations, and it goes from there to the bookkeepers and all. I mean, they're all part of this chain. So usually, thank God, we can trust these people all the way down the chain. But it's good for us to have at least some of us on the board with a certain eye for that kind of thing and an interest to help ask some questions. And let's never act like that's the sinful part of doing Christian ministry. That's part of being responsible stewards. And it's just, you know, as if there's one point that I would make in addition to what Bill said this morning, it is this, that nonprofits have a bottom line too. You don't have to quickly start talking about how we're serving people. You've got, everybody's worried in the nonprofit that we've got enough to pay the bills, right? And that bottom line, it's not just because we're a nonprofit doesn't mean that there's no profit. If it's a healthy organization, you better have profits more times than not, or at least in dollars that outlast the expenses. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not wrong to have money, it's not wrong to use money, and it's not wrong to earn money. It's not wrong to make profit. I agree very much with the thesis he had in there, whether it's privately or whether it's in the nonprofit world. And so let's see that God has given to us these things, and that in the management thereof, that we are using the gifts that he's given us that are to be used for his glory. He said it so well. Anything that we do should be for his glory. So today, whether I'm trumping finances a bit, and another one he's developed, like this morning I was in a workshop on developing personnel for the mission field and so on. I mean, it's all part of a big picture, and I don't want to just be out of balance here. Any comments, though, about what I just said? Yes.
this is slightly different, but to what extent do you think the board has a fiduciary responsibility to foreign donations? That is, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but to what extent should the board also feel responsible that we ourselves are responsible to help when there's a campaign or whatever that needs to be done?
Well, you know, let's always be charitable with each other, but let's give as the Lord prospers. And I believe that those of us to whom have been entrusted and we're involved with this kind, this ministry, we believe in this ministry, that it belongs that we're also giving to the ministry. I don't know what anybody else would, I should have thrown it out to the floor probably. Anybody want to add anything here? I think that we probably are imbalanced if we think that only going down through the list of the greatest, of the biggest contributors in the last 10 years, that these are the only ones that qualify to be put on the board of directors. But if somebody like that has some giftings that the board could use and shares the vision. Now, I'm kind of getting it almost the wrong order of things. But if all of these things come together in good alignment, it's all right to have him on the board. Certainly to have him as an advisor to the board or so on, depending on the structures of your organizations. I've deferred it back to you.
No, I think it's I think there is a certain responsibility that we have. If we're committed to an organization, we have a certain, includes also a certain financial obligation.
All right. Thank you. This is Paul Nisley from Grantham.
Right.
Yeah. Grantham, Pennsylvania. Anybody else have a... All right. I'm bringing... I wanted to go back a little bit here. Let's see if I can go back. Well, that wasn't quite what I wanted either. I better just do it. Well, that's that much. I want to give you this recommendation again, doing good even better. And then I want to introduce four other books that I have found helpful and I haven't read to the last. I've read these two books in totality. And the first one, How Are We Doing? By Gail Gifford. And she writes, it is largely from each chapter that I got those board self-evaluation questions. So if you want more on board self-evaluation, this one is a pretty good book. And then The Ultimate Board Member's Book by Kay Sprinkle is also one that I enjoyed. But I'm giving them in the order here of my recommendation. And thank you very much, there, Stuart. And
I wasn't able to get it going out and start at the beginning, so you'll just have to
up the slideshow at the menu at the top, and then go. You probably have to do it from here.
Well, it's true that I could do that. I just gave up in doing it when I had so many people watching. But and now I've got. See, now my problem is how do I get to quickly to the end? So that's why I decided not to go all the way down through this thing. Maybe you'd even know some shortcut that I'm not doing right.
There should have been an option to say from current slide.
Yeah.
Where you get started from.
Oh, here we got it. Now, this is the first one, and then these. Okay, now I'm through the second one. I wanted to make comments yet about meetings that work. If you're a pastor, I recommend this, meetings that work. An elder that has written, we are going through it as a pastor's team in this season in our church. And then Mac Tennyson, this is the book that I haven't read in totality, Making Committees Work, that I have gotten some good out of, and I'm just referring this to you. Now it's yours. Is there something else that you want to bring? I think we've got about 3 minutes left.
I have two.
You have 2 o'clock, so he said 2:05. So it's back to you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.